three very experienced IELTS investment managers, which you don't get on stage very often in Singapore, so it's a great opportunity to ask them some questions about what you think about the market or what they think about the market now. So on the far end, we have Stefan Ruoff, head of ILS at Schroders Capital. Then we have Peter DiFiore, who's managing director at Neuberger Berman. And then next to me, John DeCaro, founding principal at Elementum Advisors. So we've had some really good discussions today across quite a wide range of topics, and we're going to sort of get their opinions on the market, I think, and on Asia now. And we're going to start at the end with Stefan, and perhaps we're going to have some questions, but we're going to open it up to each of the panelists as well and let them all interject and ask each other questions if you want as well. But perhaps we can start with a little bit about what's in it for investors to allocate to ILS right now, and in particular for the Asian investor base, and how do we grow that too?
Right, well, glad to have some people left, and we're not closing down the conference without listeners, actually. You said, what's in for investors right now? I think there's always been a good case for ILS investing over the last number of years, despite the fact that we had catastrophes or we had track records in some areas that did not fulfill all the promises. So having said that, actually, when you look at a 20-year track record of the Swiss Re Cat Bond Index, it's returned 6.7% per annum in average over a 20-year period. So compare that with a high-yield bond portfolio, compare that with an investment-grade bond portfolio, and you'll realize you're doing very well, actually. Then you start looking at the volatility, you will realize the volatility is even lower than that of a high-yield bond portfolio. So I think there's a longer-term proposal for investors that's to do with decorrelation and diversification, actually, and that holds true over a relatively long period of time. If you add then inflation shielding, because we sit on a floating rate in the money market, if you add the ESG credentials a cat bond portfolio can bring along, I think you start looking at a very, very good investment proposal overall. Now, to the question why now, clearly we've seen risk spreads going up very, very significantly over the last 12 months. The Swiss Re Cat Bond Index has a risk spread, I think, above 9% as we speak. It went up almost 10% at the end of last year. So these are a few reasons why I think. Now, the question then is why for ILS investors in Asia? I think Asia, we heard it today a couple of times, is underdeveloped in terms of Asian investors coming to the asset class. We heard we have family office. We heard we have wealth managers. These are typically ILS allocators in other areas, actually. So I think we also heard today education is a key. And I think here we need really to help, and this is what we can help with, educate the investor base, because we think, hopefully you share me in that, it's a great asset class. So I stop here, but I hope there's a good introduction.
Thank you, Stefan, yes. Peter, perhaps can you add to that, perhaps, from your perspective, and maybe a little bit about sort of how different strategies can play in different ways for investors too?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I certainly agree with everything that Stefan has said, and I think, great opportunity now to attract investors that haven't participated in the space. I think in the Asia region, perhaps there are a number of investors that have not had such a great experience that we've still got to kind of work through and help them understand how the market's evolved from several years ago. And there certainly does seem to be some healthy skepticism about, pricing has moved in the right direction. How is that going to evolve over the next year or two? And I think that's all actually quite positive for investors to really be somewhat challenging of managers, and managers having to be very transparent about all of the, all of the broader risk factors that maybe weren't necessarily appreciated initially. So I think it's a really great opportunity for the asset class to sort of move to a more mature position. So, I think we'll have to wait and see if we can maintain sort of the lineup in terms of capital inflows as well as issuance, so that we don't, I think we all are obviously praying for a clean year. But if you do have that clean year and you start to bring additional capital in, where does that You know, where does that move the market? Can we hold to the new normal? You know, I think investors were brought to the asset class and started looking at it for the diversification, but they're gonna have to see the return to stay. And you know, I think a lot of these issues have been talked about earlier today. But you know, this doesn't exist in isolation. So I think it's a really unique opportunity for those investors in this area that maybe haven't looked at the space to really take a hard look at the space and benefit from the trajectory of the market as we see it now.
Great, thank you, Peter. And perhaps, John, when we're talking about why now, perhaps you could say a few words about maybe what's changed over the last 5 or 6 years and what's been learned.
Absolutely. So I think that you know, one of the most compelling arguments right now for investing in cat risk, and more specifically catastrophe bonds, is the fact that the return that you can get from investing in a liquid asset is in the low double digits. If you look at collateral yields that are around 5% and spreads on new issues that are in the 7, 8, 9% range, you're easily looking at something where you have about a 14% kind of carry. And I think that one of the things that has definitely you know, changed in the past really 6 years since 2017 and that hurricane season is a combination of higher interest rates, so there's a reasonable base return. And at the same time, there has been an investor recognition that the rates of return for assuming cat risk needed to rise from the really soft levels that occurred in 2014 to 2017. So I think that what we are at is that there's kind of been a strategic repricing higher in terms of the return that investors are demanding that corresponds with an increase in the price that cedents are willing to pay for protection. And I think if you look at those factors, you have a very compelling investment product. And one other point that I would make is that Stefan made the point earlier about cat bonds generating about a 7% annualized return for 20 years. And there has only been 1 year in the history of the Swiss Re cat bond index where it was negative, and that was last year. And if you look at the returns year to date, they've already surpassed the losses that occurred in 2022. So, you know, we believe that you can generate a reasonable, attractive, and stable return for taking event risks that are fairly remote and less likely to occur on a year-to-year basis by investing in the catastrophe bond product.
And it's an impressive track record, and the negativity last year in the index has all been earned back, so investors actually were paid for retaining their positions. So on to the next question. I'm going to turn to you first, Peter, with this one. So obviously ILS has resumed growth as a marketplace. So obviously the capital market is where we're seeing the most growth right now, but some other segments seem to be beginning to show some promise in terms of assets raised. But the growth could potentially accelerate if the market can deliver on investors' needs as well. And I'd be interested to hear how you think we could drive sort of a further institutionalization of the asset class to ensure it can capitalize on the potential and the strong investor interest for alternative in assets generally. Really, ILS should be a segment of their portfolios.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all realize that the potential for a much larger asset class is here. We've talked about the disaster gap and you know, the fact that although ILS is roughly $100 billion, there's trillions and trillions of dollars of risk out there that underlie. And I think, you know, it's great to see the return to sort of growth in the market, but as I was sort of alluding to earlier, I think that both sides of the issuers and the investors need to work together with the intermediaries and ensure that you know, we create sort of sustainable demand and supply in the right you know, in the right form. So on the issuance side, you know, continuing to see cedents who value diversification across multiple different types of capital providers. And not simply looking for the cheapest opportunity, thinking more long-term. Rating agencies and regulators certainly have a role to play in ensuring that those initial risk takers are properly transferring on risk into other structures. on the investor side, investors maintaining discipline. And you know, as they see growth of AUM, which is always a key goal of an asset manager, ensuring that you're still maintaining that underwriting discipline and being demanding of appropriate terms and conditions that make sense for your investors. So, you know, I think that's a lot of the considerations to ensure that the asset class continues to grow and for cat risk. Specifically, you know, as I alluded to earlier, you know, if we do have a clean year and we do see continued significant inflows, really ensuring that the market realizes that, yes, we have seen significant increases in pricing over the last several years, but, you know, a lot of that was kind of needing to happen because there had been periods of time where the pricing had been potentially less than it should have been. And the underlying risk, as we all know, is increasing as well. So, you know, I think that's a lot of the challenge in the near term. And then, you know, longer term, just continuing to educate investors. As I mentioned, there's a lot of skepticism. You know, I think investors, see the value of this being a very fundamental diversifier because it is so different. But because it's so different, it's also really hard to sort of educate your investment committee, especially when things go wrong. And so, you know, I think we just need to continue educating investors about, you know, what these assets are, how they should perform in the different scenarios, why we believe we understand the underlying risks, and why climate change, although that, you know, grabs all the headlines, is not necessarily the biggest risk factor in what we're doing. So all of that, I think, is really important as we continue to drive the development. One last comment. I think it would be really interesting to see more rated opportunities in the space. I know on our investor side, we have a lot of insurance companies, for example, in the United States, which, you know, would love to participate in these type of assets. But in the absence of a rating, it becomes really challenging. So continuing to think about new structures that fit even broader potential investors, I think, will help sustain the growth in the space in the time to come.
Great. Thank you, Peter. And interesting you mentioned a rating when there's an investment-grade non-CAT bond in the market at the moment. So perhaps we'll start to see that on the CAT side as well. Stefan, anything to add on the sort of further institutionalization of the asset class?
Well, I think Peter has not left a lot to cover. Well done. However, there's probably one additional aspect, and I think that came through to some extent today. This is the operational side, especially on the cat bond world. And when I say operational side, actually, there's still significant cost associated to cat bond issuances. There's still, we heard today, Singapore positioning itself as a hub, but you only have Guernsey, Bermuda, Singapore, so there's not an abundance of operating hubs. There is no exchange trade as such, although we had Josh and Steve doing a fantastic presentation. By the way, I'm not sure if they're still around, but they made us believe that it's a highly liquid market. Yes, it is for us. Is it globally speaking? Right. So there are operational pieces which are not yet fully there. And I try to sometimes dream, and one of the things I dream of is imagine a index-traded transaction that's fully executed on a blockchain. So Peter is more active than we are on the index-based products, but why don't we have a smart contract that executes a transaction from A to Z, so the investor can come in on the one side, the sponsor on the other side, and you trade it all along on a smart contract, actually, with a regulatory environment in Singapore or elsewhere that is taking care that this blockchain is properly regulated. And all of a sudden, you take out massively cost from the transaction. It's automated, it's replicable, and so on and so forth, actually. So I think thinking about the operational side gets forgotten from time to time, but I think it's an aspect I'd like to add to Peter's part.
No, that's great, Stefan. And very interesting you mentioned blockchain, because there was an ILW transaction settled on, traded on the blockchain, which uses a smart contract. And obviously, I think the first ever full security to settle on a blockchain was an ILS transaction, thanks to Cedric Edmonds.
Right.
John, anything to add on the institutionalization front, or have we covered it all?
I think you've done a good job covering it.
Okay. Well, let's move on and talk about the current marketplace and cat bonds in particular, and its drivers. And obviously, we've been in a hard market, and now recent weeks we've seen some softening. But sort of, do you think the softening is more of a correction to the over tightening, perhaps, that we saw through last year as well? We saw quite a lot of tightening. And what are your thoughts on the cat bond market's pricing leveling out rather than continuing to decline as capital flows in?
So we would articulate our view that the cat bond market is still very attractive and that pricing is in a hard and elevated market. And we would note that spreads have contracted by about 500 basis points since the end of September after they spiked in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Ian. So from that point, it looks like, yes, there's been a pronounced amount of softening, which we would attribute to basically a time lag from basically allocators wanting to get through the end of last year, making sure that, you know, no other events happened, and then the process of just running things internally to get approval for allocating additional capital, or if they hadn't already allocated capital, moving into the space. So we think that most notably we saw a significant contraction really in the second quarter of last year, or this year actually, due to those factors and just the time it takes to get capital into the market. Having said that, there was a tremendous amount of capital that left the market prior to 2022 and continued to leave after Hurricane Ian that we think sets the stage for a longer, more sustained period of higher pricing. To put things in context, the average expected return on cat bonds has been around 4% for the past 10 years. And today, we're looking at expected returns of around 7%. So there's plenty of room left for additional capital to come in and pricing to drop over the next 12 to 24 months and still be before we even get to an equilibrium level of pricing. So in our view, I think it will definitely take time for more capital to come into the market. But clearly, I think spreads have peaked after Ian and are kind of on the way back down.
Thank you, John. Now, it's very interesting that you think there's a timing issue there with inflows that has created that sort of wave of capital that's helped to just soften it slightly. There was a report out last week, I think, from Swiss Re, which said in P&C insurance they expect there to be a deficit of capital still rolling into 2024, and they expect that to knock on into the reinsurance market as well, which obviously means spreads should remain that bit higher as a result. Stefan, any thoughts on sort of the spread environment today?
Yeah, what we should probably add on top is we still have inflation as a persisting phenomenon as we speak, actually. And especially in the US, we still have above 5% inflation. In Europe, we are probably closer to 7-8. In the UK, probably even higher, which means the need for protection buying is not going backwards. It will further increase, which means we have a need of capital that's sustained out of the industry itself that needs to be covered, actually. So I think this is probably something to add to John's points, because this will help also to stabilize, I think, the level where we are.
No, I'm glad you mentioned inflation, actually, because I was reading something the other day that said that while inflation is very high in the UK, I know that all too well, and in the US it seems to be coming down quite well, rebuilding costs are rising much quicker in the US, where in the UK our rebuilding costs soared through the roof at the start of the pandemic when we had supply chain issues. So there's a bit of different countries balancing out, and perhaps the inflation is actually more entrenched than we think in everywhere, including the US. Peter, anything to add?
Yeah, and I think one interesting aspect that's relevant for ILS in terms of the comment around inflation is, you know, I think our view is that the catastrophe models tend to lag, and you know, we are seeing a release of new updates from many of the large vendors that are actually moving quite significantly year on year. You know, I think trying to continue to capture that move that we've seen since 2020, 2019, and that'll continue to provide upward support on the market, we believe and hope. You know, I think the other characteristic of the cat bond market that we haven't talked about yet that's valuable for investors is the quality of the paper has actually gotten better over time. So the terms and conditions have become more favorable, and the structures are better than they were 5, 6, 7 years ago. So that's something the models don't necessarily resolve as well, but is, you know, is qualitatively a good benefit for investors in the space. And then I just say one question I think we have is, you know, it's clear that the demand for paper is going to continue. These inflows are going to continue to come from investors, and there is a significant amount of maturity in the next 2 quarters as well. So I think the real key observation will be how the actual issuance of paper plays out. Will we continue to see cedents showing up and issuing? And, you know, it's great to see groups like Blackstone show up, and you know, to the extent that we can get more commercial corporates participating, I think all of that bodes really well for the longer term success of the market as well.
Yes, listening to the panel earlier today with the corporate risk managers, it seems there's an education process there as well, which potentially needs the insurance brokers to really step up and start to discuss ILS potential for large corporate buyers. So I'd like to move on now and maybe think more about the investors and sort of what you're hearing from them, what their sentiment is like on the market today, and in particular in the Asian region. I'm assuming you've all had some meetings while you've been in the region with some investors, prospective or existing. What kind of feedback are you receiving as you discuss existing or new ILS allocations? And I'll go to you first, John.
There's a significant amount of interest in ILS at this point in the region, and particularly I think there are a number of opportunistic investors who are seeing sort of the level of spreads and returns on cat bond products, and they're also looking at the size of kind of the capacity needs and commensurate price increases in reinsurance as well. So what we're seeing notably is a little bit of a barbelling of interest in terms of the investment products. On the one hand, there's a significant demand to invest in catastrophe bonds because they're liquid and you can generate 10 to 15% returns for taking fairly remote levels of event risk. On the other hand, there's also a recognition that pricing has widened very dramatically because of capacity needs in Florida and the Southeast. And so some of the higher risk reinsurance layers are offering significant levels of return due to the post-Ian market environment. So we're really seeing kind of a bifurcation of interest along those two extremes, with less interest for primary reinsurance in terms of kind of traditional layers of reinsurance that may have been impacted from events between 2017 through 2021.
Interesting. So do you think that investors are more positive or less in general now? Are investors beginning to, some of them beginning to get over the specter of losses from prior years perhaps? Are they beginning to see the benefits coming through? And do they understand the changes that have been made to terms and conditions, I guess, as well?
That, I think, is still a work in progress. I mean, it takes a long time for an investor to basically run through the process of getting educated about the asset class, starting to figure out how they would implement a strategy within their investment portfolio, and then running it through their investment committee to ultimately get to get the authorization to invest. So, our view right now is that there's definitely investors who had not participated in the asset class before that don't have the experience of the past, 5 to 6 years, that are basically doing their homework, evaluating how to participate, and then looking to sort of move forward. In general, I think one of the other trends that's been occurring for investors who are already in the asset class is that they have wanted to focus on the more liquid side of the market, which has been cat bonds, where there haven't really been many issues with trapped capital, side pockets, et cetera, and they are appreciating the improved terms and conditions that we're seeing in terms of the Catmon structures.
Great, thank you, John. And Peter, perhaps you could give some perspective from your based in the US. So what are you seeing on the US investor side? And then what are you seeing on the Asian side in your trip here?
Yeah, so on the, I mean, just generally, you know, interest levels are up. We're having a lot more, you know, inbound inquiries, groups looking to learn about the space, which has all been positive. I'd say, you know, I mentioned earlier, investors, I think, are still somewhat uncomfortable with the asset class, trying to understand the risks and question whether, you know, the widening of spreads is going to persist, and so they're thinking about maybe allocating into next year, but waiting to see sort of how all those how the pricing holds through the year. So, you know, that said, groups are allocating. Echo, you know, what John said, that the more liquid side does seem to be where more of the interest is immediately. And as it relates to Asia, I think to your question earlier about, you know, have people kind of come to terms and gotten over the previous loss experience or previous experiences? I mean, I think the answer is it depends with what their experience was. There's investors that have had such bad experience, you know, it's going to take a long time for them to be sort of convinced. And then there's many that have had, you know, just not okay, not great, and are still sort of trying to figure out whether they just need to approach the space in a slightly different way. And then there's a lot of investors that haven't done anything and are actively looking now. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of discussions, a lot of interest, but also a lot of wait and see. So I think the next, you know, 12, 24 months, it's going to be really interesting to see how all of that plays out. The last comment I'd say is one thing that I think has been very interesting is the consultants seem to be very interested in the space as well, both in the U.S., in the U.K., and in Australia, for example. And so I think that's, you know those groups can move quite a lot, quite quickly. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamics of how that plays out as well.
Yes, that's a very helpful comment, actually, because the consultants can be quite influential in some regions of the world. Stefan, in Europe, what are you seeing in terms of investor sentiment there? And also, what's your view on the Asian investor sort of sentiment right now?
I think the number one topic that we get in terms of questions from our investor base and also when we talk to new investors is, and what about climate change? So Peter touched it a little bit on going by, but the number one topic that is asked is, how do you handle the impact of climate change, actually? And this question leads usually to very good discussions with investors, being existing ones or being new potential new investors, actually. And the reason is, when you look at the ILS investment market, actually, first we have the public market with the cat bond side. That has fared very well, as we discussed. And it is fairly remote and removed from effects of climate change, because it usually doesn't cover flood, it doesn't cover wildfire too badly, it doesn't cover severe convective storm on a very low attachment level, actually. So this market has fared well because it's structurally and in its capital remoteness geared to protect a capital stack high in the balance sheet, actually. Whereas private ILS has suffered way more over the last 5 to 6 years, as we've heard from John. And here the discussion is very different, and that leads then to a discussion around model reliability, updates of industry exposure databases, and so on and so forth, actually. So that topic adds to investor conversations quite an interesting layer, and I think this is something we need to be prepared to explain how we handle it from a technical perspective, from a portfolio construction perspective, and also looking forward, actually. And looking forward is probably the simplest, because it's an asset class that has a relatively short maturity, right? Our transactions, the private one's 12 months, the cat bond for 3 years that resets. So it's not that we're investing over a 10, 15-year locked-in period, actually. So this is probably to add. Otherwise, I think we can confirm, or I confirm, that we see the interest coming back, but it's kind of, it's a slow and careful comeback of the interest, I qualified.
And I'm guessing the interest is not at any price as well. Investors are very keen to see returns remain elevated over the previous So, talked a lot about cat bonds, and you touched on private ILS, but I guess I'd be interested to hear, sort of, John, I know at Elementum you've had some success in raising for some of your reinsurance strategies, I believe. But what do you think needs to happen? Is it just a matter of time and demonstrating returns over time and hoping the wind doesn't blow too hard? Or are there other things that potentially the industry can do to encourage investors back into the private sort of strategies?
So Stefan and I were just talking about that prior to our panel in terms of the cyclicality of investor interest in various strategies, those strategies being catastrophe bonds versus collateralized reinsurance. And I think that it really is a function of basically just time, the passage of time and the lack of events occurring. Because, when no events happen, pricing starts to decline, we go into a soft market, and then investors are, looking for a certain absolute level of return, which tends to lead them to collateralized reinsurance, because the layers in the reinsurance market tend to be a little less remote, a little more risky, offering higher return than layers of risk in the cat bond market. So as the market softens, there tends to be an acceptance of reinsurance and a search for yield. We're not at that point yet. We're still looking in a kind of a high yield, high rate environment. And I think we're still too close to the experiences that a number of investors have had with the problems of trapped capital and side pocketing. So what I think needs to happen is, as time passes, investors will have an increased interest in reinsurance. But at the same time, we as investment managers need to focus on refining our products to make them more attractive and do a better job of handling these trapped capital valuation, side pocketing related issues. There certainly were a number of lessons that we as an industry had the opportunity to learn from 2017 through 2022.
Absolutely, yes. A very difficult time and very complex events as well. Now, moving on to you, Peter. Makes me think, I know Neuberger Berman, you've had sort of quite a focus on industry index transactions in the past. Obviously, a lot of those are in the retrocession space, and the retrocession market is an area where really capital is quite constrained still in traditional reinsurance. Is that an opportunity, do you think? But obviously, this is also an area where investors suffered some losses in the last 6 years. What do you think for the prospects for that sort of space, the index transactions? I know we're seeing them in cat bonds, but do you think at the lower levels we might see some coming back as people require retrocession?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen a significant amount of deal flow this year relative to past years for that very reason. And it's always I think that the cat bond market and seeing the issuance of retro index deals there, is just. Is highlighting that the demand is large enough that it makes sense to go into the structured products and spend the money and time to issue those versus doing maybe more on the private side. But we're certainly seeing a lot on the private side. So yeah, I think we're continuing to see a lot of interesting opportunities there. And to the point of the terms and conditions, we are seeing some beneficial developments in terms of sort of post-event process and trying to create more investor-friendly structures there, and that's something that we hope will persist beyond just the current sort of hard market. Because the challenge that I think investors face is sort of there's always this comparison to the traditional market. And, this is done this way in the traditional market, and that's just the way it's been done, and how we need it, and that really makes it challenging. Because I think very small changes on some of these structures can really help create a lot more investor comfort, and the scenes probably aren't giving up a whole lot to concede to those. So,
Great, thank you, Peter. So, I mean, on that front, in this sort of retrocession space and areas like that, there is definitely a need for capital still, and obviously the ILS market has an opportunity to, if not provide that capital, then it's capital to protect against climate-related perils. Stefan, do you have hopes for sort of market growth into new avenues on the catastrophe?
on the cat side, but not being peak perils. I have hopes. Yes. Do we have significant capacity available as we speak? For us, I can say not necessarily, actually. So, again, we heard today a lot of discussion about emerging risk, risk from Asia. I think the promise we give to investors that we do investment proposals on data reliable modeling and modeling that has proven in time, actually. So for many of the emerging risks in areas that are not very well developed, such as US or Europe, New Zealand, or probably Australia, put that together with the effects of climate change, we are in an environment where we at least see a high uncertainty in the modeling. That leads us to say it's very difficult for us to provide investors money to fund that uncertainty, actually, which would in turn either increase the risk spreads very significantly or the price you pay for that uncertainty, actually. So that's why I'm saying I have hopes. Now, there are ways around it. We heard it earlier, actually. You can capture exposures through parametric coverage. We've seen the World Bank issuing cat bonds that work very well, actually. So there are ways around it, and we do support those ways around it, trying to be innovative, support bonds that come to market. However, if we look at what I would call the traditional reinsurance way transferred into the capital markets based on unreliable modeling, we would not have the capacity. However, if you go to new ways being, as I said, parametric others, happy to support.
No, it's very interesting, actually, because it shows that managers, if they lack the confidence in the modelling, then obviously you're not going to take the capital from your investors to deploy.
Yes.
But these are the problem areas that we've heard people talking about today, where there's clearly a lot more work needs to be done at the data and modelling level, as Massey was discussing earlier in one of the panel sessions. So we hope to see improvements there. So we're down to sort of 7 minutes left. I thought I'd see if the audience has any questions. See your hands if you have a question for the panel. Oh, we have Alex has raised his hand. I was going to say, you can't all go quiet at the end of the day, or I'll start to pick on people.
It's an interesting insight, thanks to the panel. I think Peter talked about the balance between inflows and issuance, and then hoping, I know everyone's used the word hope a lot in the panel today, hoping for a clean year, right? So with that context, how mature actually are the investment communities, particularly when this asset class has been around for, what, 30 years at least? So are we seeing among, let's say, the more mature investment group, that sort of appreciation, as John Searle would have put it, acceptable mode of failure. Let's say if a cat bond was issued and they had a poor experience in the first year rather than in the last year of that tenure.
I'd say something.
Well, so,
I think a few comments on that. So I think the investors are quite mature and they're big boy investors, and I think they realize that it's a risk premium strategy and you're being paid to take risks. And so, you know, if you have a year that unfolds with risks that are expected and there are, you know, the performance is not the no loss performance, I don't think that's necessarily an issue. But, you know, if there is a surprise loss or an outsized loss relative to expectations, then that's, you know, again, you know, the sixth year of problems with that. So, you know, I think the ILS space is maybe a little bit better protected from the losses year to date because of increased retentions, right? If you look at severe convective storm in the U.S., I mean, there's been pretty significant losses year to date that are running well above the 10-year average, but most of that's being retained by insurance companies. Hurricane season's just getting started. The forecasts are starting to trend more aggressive. You know, obviously we have to see how that plays out. And, you know, obviously there's other perils as well. So, I think as long as there's not basically surprise losses or outsized losses relative to expectations, I think that's okay. But there's obviously a lot of time left in the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's you know, really a good point. And I think investor expectations need to be aligned with the way that they're actually assuming exposure to ILS. I think one of the areas where there was kind of a mismatch has been in investors who are writing a lot of, who are invested in a lot of reinsurance or don't necessarily understand what they're investing in compared to products that are more exposed to, say, catastrophe bonds or less remote, I mean, more remote risks. You know, if you look at kind of the cat bond market and how it's developed over the past 25 years, a lot of, I mean, that market was designed to provide coverage against low frequency, very high severity risks. And as the market developed and it got, I think, softer, there were a lot of investors who were really looking for yield and looking for more, they were willing to accept higher expected losses and more risks. And so, you know, as a transaction sponsor, what they wanted to do was basically provide, get as, the same type of protection for their cat bond that they were getting in reinsurance form. And that led to a lot of perils coming into the market, like wildfire risks, severe convective storm risks, European, you know, hailstorm and flooding and other things, in addition to your traditional U.S. earthquake, U.S. hurricane, and so forth. And so what, you know, fortunately, if the cat bond market has performed very well with the exception of last year when Ian happened, even though there have been a number of surprise events that have kind of caused losses to particular portfolios from some of those attrition-type perils. So I think where we're at right now is that the market is starting to reset in terms of the coverage that it's providing, which is going back to those more remote peak type perils. And that is just kind of a reset that is trying to align with investor expectations for what they really want to provide protection against. And as long as they're comfortable knowing that, I mean, we've had conversations with our investors about the same thing, which is, you know, we expect to take losses from an Ian type event or an earthquake in California or an earthquake in Tokyo, right? What we don't expect to take losses from are wildfires in California and, you know, a tornado in the middle of the U.S. So I think it's incumbent upon the investment manager to basically be transparent with their investors in terms of really, you know, this is what you're covering. And to that point, we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where there's expectation mismanagement. And I think as Peter made the point, you know, we are a little early in the hurricane season right now, but our hope and desire would be that we, you know, have a clean year. I think our industry needs it. We haven't had a clean year since 2016. So,
thanks, John. Any other questions from the audience at all? No. Well, given that we're actually running very low on time now, I'm going to start with Stefan and ask you sort of what are your relatively brief hopes for the rest of the year? And obviously, the cat bond market has been going great guns so far this year, and everybody's expecting it to continue. As long as nothing happens to derail that. Have you got hopes for other product sets? I mean, you have your life funds, for example.
We had a lot of talk about hopes, actually, and I hope to get future risk transfer for certain risks, actually. But I'd like to express more confidence, right? So probably my final words, and partially to your question as well. John explained where we stand with a cat bond portfolio and the yield level it's achieving, actually. So remember, a year ago, or well, 10 months ago, we had Hurricane Ian. The impact of Hurricane Ian on the Swiss Re Cat Bond Index, in hindsight, if it was a $50 billion loss to the market, would probably be somewhere between 200, 250 basis points to the cat bond market. So you have a portfolio with 13, 14, 15% yield. So you withdraw the 200 basis points, you still come up with an investment return that's above 10%. I think that's a very strong proposal, and it does make me confident that this asset class will come through quite nicely, even if we had events, actually. So that's probably one of the confidences I'd express as a final. And let's spare the other comments for another conference, but I think to end on a positive note is probably a good thing.
Thank you, Stefan. Peter, what are you confident about for the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, so you know, just to build on Stefan's comments, I mean, I think this industry has been tested in a number of ways over the last 6-7 years, and we're still here, and we're talking about growth. And, you know, for investors in an increasingly volatile and challenging world more broadly, you know, this is a really amazing asset class to add value to their portfolio. So, you know, I have hope that we'll continue to deliver that for our investors. It's not necessarily easy to ensure that we're continuing to create better opportunities and drive better value for our investors, but we're willing to do it, and that's why we're here. And so that plus continuing to educate new investors about the asset class, I think that's all incredibly you know, positive. And so oftentimes I can be a little negative on the space, but I'm very optimistic.
That's great to hear. So confidence, John, and also how are you going to deliver value for your investors to the end of this year?
We're very confident in you know, our ability to deliver value for investors. I mean, we're very focused on basically being transparent, being focused on, you know, underwriting and making very good decisions. We like to manage for total return. And, you know, I think we just need to basically, I'll reiterate what I said earlier. I mean, make sure that investor expectations are kind of aligned with the way we've created our portfolios. And at the end of the day, we you know, can't control the weather. It's the only weather we have. So,
thank you, John. So we are out of time. So I'd like you all to thank our three panelists, please.